I'm just along for the ride.
All right, we do not own music rights. I put the telephone number in. Part one, homelessness and our community's response. We're going live, y'all. Oh, nothing here. Just don't say nothing and we don't know the mic if the microphone's picking us up before. I don't want to say nothing ratchet. You know? People are like, oh.
No, we can't. Not being affiliated with the COG.
So it should be on your page.
Yes, tag me in a post.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there we are. There I am, watching my phone.
Wow, there we are.
Next week, I'm doing like a telephone interview for them.
I literally can't not stare at myself.
I know, it's really hard.
I'm just gonna stare at my notes. It's like when you FaceTime someone, I would forget.
You?
Little
yeah.
Me.
Did you need water?
I have one.
Okay.
Thank you, though.
You're welcome. Play like a little intro of music and then y'all still nervous?
Huh?
Y'all still nervous?
I am. Katie's just like, oh whatever, I don't have to talk.
I'm gonna put you on the mic, Katie.
Okay. Oh, you're gonna have to say all who you are.
My introduction.
Hi, I'm Katie.
Hello.
I'm gonna put
the second I start talking, though, you all see my face gets super.
Everything
Oh, yeah. No question.
That's funny.
I think that it's
more daunting because it's on the live, like, so whereas it's on the radio, like, you could
it's
true.
Yeah, I hear it. You probably can hear it. We need that.
Oh, hearts.
We got 9 washers. What's up?
Welcome to Soul Time. This is Dr. Phenomenal Lee, and today we have a special topic for everyone. We thank you for tuning in. I see all you guys. Hi, Thaddeus. Hey, Steven. Who else we got on here? Jada. Hey, you doing, Coop? Coop, we got somebody here from the boxing class. Katie is hanging out with us today. So we got our ladies' boot camp is just showing up all over Wilmington. How you doing, Brandon? Thank you for watching. What up, E? I appreciate all of you for being here. We have a special topic today. It is about homelessness. But we specifically are going to talk about our community's response. But I know that all of this information is going to be relevant wherever you are, because homelessness is a nation problem. Before we get into today's topic, I just want to give you guys an update. Today is National HIV/AIDS and Awareness Day. And if you don't know, Seeds of Healing, seeds started from our work in the community to bring about HIV awareness, and so that we can commemorate those who have been affected by this ailment, as well as supporting the community in a response to stamp out stigma. And I just want you to know, in regards specifically to people that are of African American descent, although we are about 13% of this nation's population, half of us in the past couple of years, about half of us, people of color, have comprised the new diagnosis in this nation. So when it comes to finding out what your status is, getting into treatment, realizing that it is a circumstance that you can live with, you do not have to succumb to this ailment. If you want more information, you can always reach out to Seeds of Healing. So we call that's the acronym for Seeds of Healing. So we have a webpage, but just to let you know, on March 23rd, 2019, we will have our second 5K event right here in Wilmington at Greenfield Park. The event is from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. We're going to be doing testing. We're going to be giving our grand prizes for our poetry contest. We're going to have some competitive games such as bingo. We're going to have a basketball trivia. And if you show up and you participate, we know that you will not leave empty-handed. Not only will you have the opportunity to learn your status, and they're giving out gift cards if you show up and you learn your status, but you're going to walk away with some valuable knowledge and spend time with the community and just hang out and have fun, and we're going to stamp out stigma. So when you use the hashtag ThinkRedILM, you will see that we have spread this knowledge, and you will find a lot of information. Early bird registration fee up until the end of this month is $15. And that's basically just to pay the cost so that we can have a great time. We're going to be doing face painting for the children. We want everyone to come on out. So again, remember, today is National Black HIV/AIDS and Awareness Day. And we don't want everyone to become a part of those numbers if you have not been affected. And if you are living positive, know that we have your back. So that's my promo for Seeds of Healing, and now we're going to get this show started because we have Megan Zielinski here. Did I say your last name right?
Yeah, Zielinski.
Zielinski. Is it okay if I just call you Megan?
Yeah,
today?
Absolutely.
All right, and then we have Katie.
Yes.
All right. So, Katie, I'm going to go ahead and start off with Megan's bio. I don't have your information, Katie, but I'm going to, you're going to get on the mic and let you introduce yourself. So, Megan, she has a master's degree in public health from the University of North Texas. She has a BA in social psychology from the University of Mallon. She has over 5 years' experience in direct client services, working with a variety of vulnerable populations that include youth, adolescents, adults, those with mental and health substance abuse diagnoses, individuals that have experienced homelessness, and of course, our nation's veterans. Currently, she is the Homeless Continuum of Care Director for the three counties, New Hanover, Brunswick, and Pender. And as the director, she oversees HUD compliance. I didn't know that. Big thing. Reporting and grant funding. She operates the coordinated entry process for how individuals get linked to services. Hopefully we'll be able to talk about the effect from Hurricane Florence.
Absolutely.
All right. And she manages the local homeless information management system and consistently analyzes the community for gaps in services. That's a heavy load on you over there, right?
Yeah, it's a lot.
So Megan is going to bring the knowledge. But before we get into homelessness and what all of this is about that's on her bio, Katie, tell the people who you are.
I'm Katie. I'm the continuum of care intern. I'm a senior at UNCW studying political science with a minor in campaign management. And I'm just here to help out Megan.
Did you say campaign management?
Yes.
So you should be learning a lot right about now because people are getting ready for 2020.
Yeah, last semester I worked on local campaigns, so we there's a lot to do.
I bet it is.
It's a big year coming up.
She's doing a great job.
I believe that. So, Megan, I don't know where to begin. I don't know if I should start by asking, what is the continuum of care? Can we define homelessness?
Yeah.
We can just let this roll.
Yeah, I think it's really important to define what a continuum of care is.
Mm-hmm.
It's several different things. So the COC manages the response system of homelessness. So when homelessness does occur, we want it to be brief, one-time experience, and non-reoccurring. So when we think of a well-run homeless response system, it's many agencies across like our whole area working together to collaborate, track data, have multiple different types of services for every kind of client that we might encounter to ultimately end homelessness. So it requires a lot of work from those agencies to do on their own, and the COC is to its job is to help coordinate that work through helping them get federal funding, doing community advocacy, managing that data. There's just like a lot of components to it. The best, my favorite metaphor to use to describe a continuum of care is that I think of it like a play. Mm-hmm. So you have your actors and your actresses, your audience, and then you have producers and directors. So the audience is the folks that we're surveying. The actors and the actresses are our agency. So they are the front and center. They're acting in the play. They're doing the case management, the housing location, and a whole host of other issues. Then we have the producers and the directors, which is the COC. So they are
making... And COC stands again for...
Continuum of Care.
Okay, all right, continuum of care. All right.
Good question, yeah. So they make sure everything in the background is running and that the system is running the way that it should. So that way the actors and the actresses aren't worrying about like set changes or costumes or lighting or any of those little details. They're focused on putting on a really great show for the audience, which are the clients we're serving. That's what they do best, is serving clients, getting housing, case management, linking them to services. And so the COC runs everything in the background and just make sure that it's all working.
Now, so here's the irony of it, and I'm going to say irony because you gave us a production. You told us so much, but when I think of homeless, I see aloneness, I see marginalized, I see a standalone, I see lack of resources, but what you just demonstrated, it sounds like there's a lot in place. So with that, with me saying that, what exactly is homeless, and then we can get into what is the response of
right.
You know, this stage show, you know.
So homelessness has a different definition for everybody. So HUD has four definitions, which is place not living for human habitation, so like in a park or in a car, something like that, and emergency shelters, so something like Good Shepherd or Salvation Army, transitional housing, which is basically what it's some that's going to transition you into permanent housing, or an institution where they were temporarily residing, so like a hospital or maybe jail or substance abuse or mental health facility. Because we are HUD funded, we share the same definitions that HUD does. However, as a community, we understand that homelessness can look different in many different ways, so couch surfing or maybe living in a hotel for one night. And so as a community, we pull together to still provide resources for individuals that might not meet these specific HUD requirements.
So what is couch surfing? Because I've heard that term before, and I want the audience to really understand what exactly is couch surfing. Because from what I've learned about couch surfing, someone may not think that they're homeless, but from the definition of couch surfing, they really need to understand what is going on.
Yeah, so couch surfing is basically you're going from couch to couch every night or every couple of nights. You don't have a stable place to call home. You're not sure if you're going to stay there that night, or you know that your time on this in this person's house is very limited. So again, that you could be with family, you could be with friends, but yeah, it's basically hopping from one place to the other without really having a concrete place to say, like, this is my home.
Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to couch surfing, would an individual that's couch surfing actually consider themselves homeless?
I think it depends on the individual. A lot of things that we do in the community when we're working with individuals is a lot of it's self-report. So we have an assessment that assesses vulnerability, and that is all self-report. So if an individual says that they, you know, slept on the street the night before, then we're not detectives. We're not there to play detective,
yeah,
to see, like, oh, we're questioning your story.
Yeah.
When we did point in time just recently on January 30th.
What exactly is point in time?
That's when the community goes out and counts unsheltered and sheltered individuals.
Mm.
So the COC coordinates that whole event, and we work with agencies, volunteers, and just anyone in the community to, we conduct a 1 to 2 minute survey with the individual to first assess if they are actually homeless, and then just go through the questionnaire to collect data, report it back to HUD per HUD requirements sometime in April. They actually don't count couch surfing in that assessment. That doesn't actually count.
You know, when you said that they went out and they did this count, and then you mentioned something about self-reporting. So I was curious to know, how are people self-reporting? Like, who are they reporting to so that they can fill out these surveys? So trying to understand what circumstance do they find themselves in where they actually have the opportunity to fall in the hands of resources.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I wanted to know, let's talk about the numbers.
Yeah.
What does homelessness look like for New Hanover County and surrounding areas?
For sure. So we can't report on any of our numbers from 2019's point in time, because
mm-hmm.
nothing has been finalized, so we can't release anything that we have. But 2018, because we do it every year. So 2018, we found, among the three counties, we found 333 individuals. And that was 135 were staying in an emergency shelter, and then 127 were unsheltered. So that's,
so
they're
living
outside.
So you guys found these people on the street?
Yeah.
And so you actually go out in the middle of the night or the day?
Yeah. This year we did it during the day. We started at 6:30 in the morning, and it's a 24-hour reporting period.
Mm-hmm.
So we started ours 6:30 in the morning, January 30th, and it continued to January 31st at 6:30 in the morning. So we went out and we were driving all over Wilmington, surveying individuals or counting them.
Mm-hmm.
And we utilized a new technology this year called ArcGIS, which is also a mapping tool.
Mm-hmm.
So we're able to see where our clusters of homeless individuals are staying. And we can take that and we can say, hey, you know, there seems to be a lot on Market Street. Maybe we should have a resource there, or, you know, however we want to use that to leverage.
Another point, because
yeah.
I'm going to ask you, so what do you do with the numbers?
So we report it back to HUD, and we
mm-hmm.
use all of that data for all of our grants this year. That's why the event is so important, because
mm-hmm.
we want to accurately capture what's going on in our community, which it does make it a little difficult that it's in January because people are cold, and so they might be staying in a hotel that night,
mm-hmm.
but then they might enter back onto the street the next day or a couple days after.
Mm-hmm.
Or individuals might leave the area because they know that point in time is happening and they might not want to be counted in that. So it is, it's a really important event, and
mm-hmm.
we do it every year in the last 10 days in January. And yeah, we have tons of grants coming up this year to bring more money into the community, and we reference that data in every single question and application. And it's also good for our community leaders to know about, so they understand that, is the problem getting better, is it getting worse, what's
going on?
You know,
I had a question for you in regards to what has been our community leader's response to the homeless problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I know I thought I was going to bring it up a little later, but you said you actually give that information to
mm-hmm.
them. So when you give politicians or leaders this information, how do they actually get involved or influence how grant funding or resources are allocated?
Yeah, so we get contributions from the city, the county, the state, and then the federal government. But we could always use more resources. I mean, this is a long range problem that's going to require long range solutions, and so we're always needing as many resources as we could possibly get our hands on. So the county, the city, the state, federal government, they're all involved in contributing funding to this problem. And then we have several coalitions all around the county. It's like I'm involved in a Brunswick coalition, involved in an affordable housing coalition, which they actually just held their legislative breakfast back in January, mm-hmm. and they brought up a really good crisis, which is affordable housing. And so everybody kind of came together. They had a few speakers to present on the affordable housing crisis. It's crucial to raise awareness about issues like these, and to keep the awareness going too. Buy-in from stakeholders like the city and the counties, because at a local level we can do a lot with flexibility and money and funding, but once we start solely depending on HUD and the state, we kind of become, you know, under their thumb, and we don't really have that flexibility anymore. There's tons of requirements that we have to meet, so we want as much flexibility as we can.
So let's zone in regards to the homeless concern. What have we seen, what trends, particularly since Hurricane Florence, what trends when it comes to homelessness are, you know, critical here in our region?
So since Hurricane Florence, we have seen more consequences a few months after. So I have never been through a major storm like this before, and I always thought like the major consequences would come right after that, but we're still seeing 5 months from the storm that people are still getting evicted from complexes because of like health issues, safety with mm-hmm. mold or whatever happened with water flooding and roof damage. So we're still seeing people like getting evicted and not even being able to enter their homes. So I think that the trend is that that's going to keep increasing, because mm-hmm. now we have all these individuals that are hitting our system that we weren't prepared for, and we're talking about hundreds. So we need to get ahead of that, and we need to make sure our system can handle it. Mm-hmm. I can't say for certain what the point in time will show for 2019. If I had to guess, I would think that it would be an increase from last year, or we would see more individuals saying that they were homeless because of Hurricane Florence. But again, it's just so difficult to tell when there's so much back end we have to do between now and April when we submit our mm-hmm. official report.
You know, I want to ask, there has been, conversation that Wilmington is not affordable. So you figure you had people that even did have moderate to higher income who still wind up homeless because of the storm. But when you live in a community where, housing is not affordable, what has been like a coordinated effort? So we talk about the organizations that you say that exist, but these people that are being evicted, what has been the response though? Are they prioritized when it comes to opening up of new available apartments, or is housing being built? Are there more beds and shelters? Are there financial resources that are given to them as a priority so that they can relocate? What does that look like for people that become homeless in an area where they are not going to be able to afford market rent?
Yeah, there's a few different programs. Mm-hmm. So there is something called Back at Home, mm-hmm. which is funding that was passed down through the state, mm-hmm. and that was for an agency picked that up, and that's specifically for individuals who are homeless because of Hurricane Florence. So there's different eligibility requirements mm-hmm. to get into that or to access that financial.
Now, I never heard of that one. Mm-hmm. How do they find out about that
you can
program?
Go to 211, or you can go online and just Google Back at Home.
Okay, and they can find that out at the 211 area. I hope you guys are listening over the airways and on Facebook Live. 211, ask about Back at Home.
Okay. Yeah, they're actually going off the Houston Harvey model. So mm-hmm. Houston did something like this where it's essentially rapid rehousing, where mm-hmm. you're placing people into housing and then helping them work on things like if they need employment or mental health or substance abuse or whatever they want to work on with their case manager. And so it follows that model. So North Carolina used it from Harvey because they had a lot of success with it in Texas.
And that spins off because we have a question. Someone mentioned who's tracking them. And if you're listening over the airways, we are 104.9 Making Impact. You might be listening to us on 1490 AM. Thank you. So if you are listening over the radio, those are our stations. So if you're switching from Facebook to the radio, you're in your car, you're moving around, 104.9 or 1490 AM. Someone asked, who's tracking? So once you gather this information about who's homeless, where they are, and what regions, what is the tracking process? What is that about?
We have an entire system called HMIS, Homeless Management Information System, and that is a system that's used all across the United States. So anyone who's working with homeless individuals accesses the system, and that's how we track everything. And the COC is in charge of making sure that it's upholding like data integrity and data standards. And so we run our own, you know, internal reports and reports with the community. We send reports to HUD to make sure that our data looks good. So there's a lot of data involved in this.
Okay. What are some of the misperceptions about homelessness that people may not have clear?
That every homeless person has like a substance abuse problem, or every homeless person might have a mental health issue. Individuals experiencing homelessness are lazy or don't have jobs. Just standard stereotypes and preconceived notions that we often hear that, I mean, you would hear every day, like, oh, this person's lazy, they don't want a job, or X, Y, Z. I mean,
and everybody that's homeless doesn't necessarily mean that they don't have access to, like, or they're broke, or, you know, they don't have.
We met several individuals on point in time that actually had full-time jobs, but they couldn't afford to get into housing. So, yeah, it's homelessness looks different on every single individual, and everybody is one crisis away from experiencing homelessness.
Great point.
And I think that Florence painted a picture for the community that your friends and your neighbors who can't enter into their homes are now facing homelessness. And so I think that's changing the way that we perceive that, because it can happen to anybody. I've worked with so many clients before, went through a bad divorce, credit just, you know, went in the dirt, ex took everything, and now they're facing this situation. They have no family to fall back on. I mean, there are so many things that can happen that put you in this situation.
Wow. If you're listening over the airways and you want to call in to ask a question, please do so at 910-248-3403. Ms. Howard, she said that she's listening online live from Chapel Hill. Thank you for tuning in. She's dropping some knowledge for us.
Ooh.
HMIS system is the tracking system to HUD for homeless, for your homeless status. You must, she
is
just
she
like, she's working hard.
She
is working hard. Thank you. And we appreciate you for helping us out.
Yes.
Stephen is always dropping a number. It's 240-3403-248. Stephen, 248, I so appreciate you. Stephen has another radio station, and he's actually listening and watching from New Jersey.
Oh,
so
nice.
I appreciate him. Thank you for listening, Doris. I appreciate you. I see Cressy is listening in. Sherry Brown is listening in. Elizabeth is going to be on the show next week for Valentine's Day. We will be talking about heart health, a special topic, and then we have some priority conversation for the ladies. Olivia Rice says hi. Thank you for listening in. Tisha Crawford joined in. One of the questions that I have for you was, how does our area, and I know that this is, there are other people listening from other regions, but when we talk about our area, you mentioned that there was a number about 300 that were counted. And some people may think that this is not a lot, especially if you live maybe in the Northeast, like in the New York area, like, eh, that's not really a problem.
Right.
But when you look at percentages or ratios, how do we compare to the state and the national average when it comes to homelessness?
So in 2017, the state of North Carolina released their numbers, and it was about 9,000 people in the state of North Carolina are experiencing homelessness. Mm-hmm. And the national numbers are actually over 500,000. So 553,742 individuals across the nation are experiencing homelessness. And the big number that we try to focus on is chronically homeless individuals, because those are the individuals that have been homeless for a very, very long time, like far too long. They're the most vulnerable, and so the more vulnerable you are, the more likely you're actually to pass away on the street. And that is its own separate issue. There's a national annual holiday to remember individuals who have passed away on the street.
I didn't know about that. Mm-hmm. Do you know what the holiday is that we can share?
It's on our Twitter. I'm not sure.
That's all right. You got this lovely intern. Katie's going to look that up.
Yeah, it's, I think it might be in November.
I'll let Katie look it up and then we'll drop it in the comments. People actually do die on the street. And
absolutely.
I recently heard that, like, in Chicago when they had the extreme freezing about a week ago, that there were instances. What does it look like in regards to health for people that are homeless?
It's scary, honestly. Because if you think about, you know, your health, if something is going wrong, like you're gonna go to the doctors.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, you know, you have insurance. But if you are a person who's experiencing homelessness, you're not going to have a place to store your medication. I actually worked with a client who was a diabetic, and he didn't have anywhere to put his insulin because he was living in parks, and his health was deteriorating because of that. And we finally housed him, and he actually ended up passing away about a week after we housed him. And that is can be common, because when you are experiencing homelessness, your body is in a constant state of fight or flight. You don't know where you're gonna sleep that night. You don't know who's gonna maybe take your stuff or beat you up or maybe even kill you. You just don't know these things. Where are you gonna eat? How are you gonna survive? And so when someone has been experiencing that for so long and they finally get into housing, their body can come to a rest and finally just
slow completely down.
Right. And all of that, those health issues that they're battling from, you know, stress and that fight or flight, can eventually just take over and
so
pass away.
Where, say for instance, you have someone that has chronic medical conditions, high blood pressure, need to store their diabetes medications, are there places or resources available that can give them accessories to help them while they are homeless?
It depends on the agency, and I can't think of an agency off the top of my head, but we do have a 2019 street sheet that the Continuum of Care does every year, and it's on our website, so capefearcog.org, under the Tri-County Interagency tab, and it has a bunch of different services on there, so shelter or medical, food pantry. It's just like a ton of services that we try to keep updated as best we can, and we do a big release every year, so everyone has like the most up-to-date.
So this street sheet, is this something that's unique to our area, or is this in any region?
I think any region probably has their own resource guide. We just call it the street sheet. That's just what it's always been called. But I think that every community region has this. I actually came from the Austin COC, and there was an online resource called Aunt Bertha. I don't know if that's specific to Austin, but it was somewhere where you could go and type in what you need, and then all these different resources
all the resources
up.
Will pop up.
Yeah.
What we're going to do is we're going to add in the comments. We're going to make sure that people have access to the street sheet by the end of the show, and that they know what that national day to commemorate.
I found the day.
You found it?
Yes.
If you follow her feed, then we can just drop it in the links. Or what is the day? Let
it's
us know.
December 21st.
December. What is the name of the day?
Homeless Persons Memorial Day.
Homeless Persons Memorial Day.
Yes.
What goes on that day?
Some communities hold like a vigilance, like candles. Actually, in Austin, there is a tree that's dedicated to individuals that have passed away on the street. Wilmington, I know that, I think that article that I posted on the Twitter.
Yeah, it says that.
Posted a bit, like, had a bit vigilance in
the
Wilmington.
Yeah, the events are unique to their communities, but they often include readings of names, candles, prayers, personal remembrances, marches, and moments of silence.
Ms. Howard is working. Go ahead, I'm listening.
Sorry, they're usually held outside.
To be a support of.
Yes.
Ms. Howard is working hard over here. She said 5th and San Pedro in downtown LA is this country's largest homeless community, and it extends over 6 blocks. Wow.
Yeah.
OConnect.org is the site for Orange County in North Carolina. December 1st is the annual Homeless Person Memorial Day.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Thank you for sharing that information. How you doing, Winnie? Thank you for tuning in. You and Grandma are listening. Hey, Grandma. Everybody, if y'all on the line.
I love this.
Some shout out
to
my Grandma. Hey, Mama. I'm sorry, you guys. I had to, like, break script.
No.
You can't ignore your grandmother.
No, you cannot.
If you're listening over the airwaves, we want you to dial in at 910-248-3403. If you have a question or if you want to leave a comment, maybe this is a topic that is important to you, or maybe we didn't answer something that you might have pressing on your mind. Ms. Howard says she appreciates, thanks for sharing. How difficult is it for homeless individuals to find sustainable employment and continue their education, even when they do find housing opportunities? Like, does it put them behind, you know, the eight ball?
Oh, it's incredibly difficult. So while a person is experiencing homelessness, it's incredibly difficult for them to focus on anything else. And so I like to refer back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs for this. I'm sure that you've studied that in some capacity. And so it's, you know, you go have this pyramid and you move through the pyramid to reach self-actualization. And you have to go through each block on the pyramid to reach that top. You can't go from 3 to 5 and back to 1. And the very first level to get through is physiological needs. So your food, your water, your sleeping, your breathing. And then next it moves up to safety. And so that's security. Where am I sleeping tonight? Is my body safe?
Yeah.
And then it goes through belongingness. So what are your relationships? And then esteem, so feeling accomplished, and then finally reaching self-actualization, which is, you know, achieving one's full potential. So an individual who's experiencing homelessness might not ever reach that, because if they can't get past that first part of, or even the second part of having a stable place to call home, then it makes it very difficult because their basic needs aren't being met.
That belonging part that you mentioned, there's research that has been done that people that do not feel connected, they tend to have chronic, you know, problems, psychosocial
outcomes. And individuals who are experiencing homelessness tend to isolate themselves as well, because sometimes they feel that the system just isn't working and they've given up. And that's very sad in its own way. And so we don't want anyone to feel like that. That's why we're always trying to improve the system, always trying to get more resources. But we try to take a housing first approach. This ties into that Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Is housing first, is we will meet you where you are to house you. It's not dependent on if you're if you have income, if you are getting treatment for substance abuse or mental health or your criminal history. It's just housing you first, and then once you're in housing, then we can start working on any issues that the person wants to work on. So it could be substance abuse, mental health, employment, anything. And so we call that housing first, and it actually is the national best practice for housing. It has about 86% success rate. So we try to incorporate that as best we can, and really focus on, like I said, just meeting the person where they're at in the situation.
So what I'm hearing is when you're trying to help someone that is homeless, it's like give them shelter first, and then the other things you sort of feed into their concerns, and hopefully they'll be able to sustain.
Yeah,
like just get them out of.
Yes, give them 4 walls, because you can do so much when you have an address. You can put it on your resume, you can finally get your IDs or apply for SSI or SSDI, and just the fact that it gives you security. Now you have 4 walls, you have a door that locks, you can cook food. There's so many things that we often forget about because we haven't experienced that, that four walls can provide us so much comfort. I mean, mm-hmm. just the lock, I've heard clients tell me so many times, just the lock on my door makes me feel so safe, knowing that mm-hmm. This is my space and people just can't walk in and take my stuff.
You know, I've always had a concern, and in 2 weeks from now, we're going to have a part two, and we're going to talk about transitional living opportunities for people that are homeless that are on chemotherapy or were discharged from the hospital, and they have exceptional health needs, and they're homeless. So that's going to be our part two. But what I was going to say was, one of the concerns that I've always had, and I don't know if you can speak to this, when people live in a shelter, but they have to leave. So
it depends.
They sleep
yeah.
in the shelters overnight, but in the morning they have to actually leave the facility. And it can be cold outside, or so you said it depends on the facility.
Yeah, it depends
so
on the shelter.
So are there facilities where people can sleep, but then maybe use the time during the day to help gather resources or have access to warmth?
Yeah, so unfortunately Salvation Army's shelter is not operating because of the storm, so I can't speak to their shelter, but Good Shepherd has a day shelter where you can go in. I know they have tons of resources pooling into that agency. I actually just heard about how they're going to have computer literacy, so they have volunteers come in with computers and people can get on and fix their resume, maybe apply for some jobs. So that's one resource that's coming into that specific shelter. They do have a day, so they do breakfast, lunch, and dinner. But there, it does get a little bit more specific with, you know, what times you can go, you can get an intake for the shelter. And that's all, like, very specific things that I can't really get into.
So once the Salvation Army shut down, was something else made available in place of?
No, so when this
all
happened.
How many beds was that?
50.
50 beds,
yeah.
Okay.
Their roof, like, just mm-hmm. the roof came off during
the storm.
Yeah, and just all the water just or him. So they've been trying to get it back up and running, and they're hoping sometime in March. But you know, churches opened up their doors and things like that for sheltering during the storm. We're not really seeing that too much right now, except for the emergency shelter that was actually done at a point in time. There was an emergency shelter that was created for just some of the coldest nights that was done by Walking Tall. And the Anchor Church, and so they were like absolutely no barrier shelter, just come in and get away from the cold. So there are people in the community that are, you know, doing other things to help homeless individuals, but I think a lot of that has subsided now since Florence.
Ms. Howard said that McDonald's House has a home for its families. And I think she's referring to those people that are medically fragile, I think.
Okay.
You can confirm for me, Ms. Howard. She also said allow churches and nonprofits to receive HUD funds that will act as a shelter on days the temperatures are below 30. Okay, that's good to know. Would information like that be on the cheat sheet, you think?
We have agencies. We have faith-based agencies that are HUD-funded. So church, we have First Fruit Ministries, they're HUD-funded. Good Shepherd receives HUD funding, and Family Promise receives HUD funding, too. So,
so
we do have
those
agencies.
Three places again?
First Fruit Ministries,
Family
Promise,
and Good Shepherd. So those are our HUD-funded churches that are in this region. Those three places are in New Hanover County, am I correct?
Correct. And they're not entirely HUD-funded. They just receive some financial assistance. So that's important to know that it's not 100%, but they do receive. They, you know, this continuum of care helps them mm-hmm. apply and get their data together so they can receive HUD funding.
Latina asks, were they still doing Pitt County? And if so, how often? I think she's probably, I don't know exactly if you're talking about the count, Latina. Clarify, I missed your question when you first dropped it. That is, they do that here sometimes. I book online to get around it. Okay, Ms. Howard, she's on Facebook comment and answering questions. People are like, wow, they never knew that. So there's some information that you're sharing, Megan, that people were not aware of. What we do here on Soul Time, we want to promote and encourage our community to be self-empowered, to access resources, be aware, and to get involved. Mm-hmm. So my question to you is, if I was an individual of the community or someone else that is listening, what is the most likely thing that I can do to show support for someone that is homeless?
Well, you can always volunteer. That's a great start. Mm-hmm. But I really think that it goes beyond that, and education about homelessness is so important. Mm-hmm. Just the way that we even refer to individuals. I know I'm sure throughout this, people have heard me say individual experiencing homelessness, or folks or clients. And that's because homelessness is a situation. It doesn't define somebody. So even just kind of tailoring your language when speaking about individuals really, really makes a difference. Reducing those stereotypes that we talked about and those preconceived notions, just becoming aware of how homelessness affects not only the individual but our community. Mm-hmm. Homelessness is a public health issue, it's a public safety issue, it's an economy issue. It costs 3 times more annually to keep someone on the street than it does to permanently house them.
Wow.
So yeah, that's a statistic that people actually don't realize. So it affects all aspects of the community, individual level, you know, macro level. It's everybody's problem, honestly.
Yeah. And so, Katie, how are you helping out as an intern? What are you doing with Megan to sort of keep this ball rolling?
I'm doing lots of things, because the continuum of care is just Megan. So it's usually a much bigger staff. So I'm just here to help out. I do administrative work. We did the whole point in time together the full day.
Mm-hmm.
Talked to lots of people. I like read things and I summarize them so she doesn't have to waste her time. Exactly. I like proofread the whole street sheet and contacted everyone, made sure everything was updated and accurate.
That is so important.
Very important.
Yeah.
When we receive resource information, it can be frustrating when you think you have access to information, you contact and then the office is closed or it's the wrong number.
Even if just
website.
The hours are wrong, mm-hmm. anything like that's very confusing, so
thank
just make sure
that
is all accurate.
Yeah,
she's literally my right-hand woman.
I see. For the counting, who does the counting? Is that a volunteer thing? Who comes out to do
the
counting?
Agencies got involved, so Good Shepherd, First Fruit. They have First Fruit Ministries has a huge outreach team, so they know where a lot of people are in their encampments. We had Family Promise, we had Salvation Army, we had random just volunteers that wanted to get involved. And Katie and I went out together in our team. I mean, everybody. We got a ton of volunteers. We wouldn't be able to do the point in time without volunteers and without our agencies. Mm-hmm. There is absolutely no way that Katie and I could cover 3 counties. And getting at the right time, you know, you have to get there early before mm-hmm. people head out to maybe go to work. So it's really important.
Ms. Howard asks, more churches need to know how to become HUD program agents. Is that like a need to know? Do you have that information? How do churches become HUD-funded agents?
There's a process to it, and it gets very mm-hmm. complicated, and I think that it would probably take up hours on
okay.
the show. But it's definitely possible for agencies to become HUD-funded.
Is there like a resource or a website or agency they would contact?
Yeah, the Continuum of Care.
So they will contact you?
Yeah.
Okay. And you guys have a website?
Yes,
that
we do.
We're going to drop that in the link. Ms. Howard said that oftentimes most of the hundreds of thousands of dollars goes more to staff than providing home, shelter, or hotels in crisis. Okay, Ms. Howard, she hitting this from all points. All right. Stacy said her daughter had it in her heart to prepare dinner for homeless individuals in December. We did it again last week and has vowed to do it each month of 2019.
So
our next date will be March 2nd.
Awesome.
That's awesome. So
awesome.
Providing a meal to mm-hmm. someone that is homeless. Ms. Howard said, she wants to know how much has Wilmington awarded this year to the homeless population and how many PIT did you have for 2000? I guess PIT is an acronym for something.
Point in time.
Okay, mm-hmm. I caught on. So, do we know how much Wilmington was awarded or did award for the homeless population this year, and how many. I think you did say that we didn't have our 2019 count.
We don't have our 2019 point in time data, so we can't speak to that. But 2018, we can go over the numbers again if we need to.
I think you said it was about 300.
Yeah, 333 is what we reported to HUD. As for the funding, actually, that's all online. You can go to HUD.gov and they just released COC renewal grants, so you can actually go and see like which programs were awarded federal dollars. So it's very transparent.
So it's a transparent process, but how do they allocate how much is going to be funded? Is that like a advocacy push so that you can get the maximum amount that you can, or do they crunch the numbers and figure it out? Or is this something that we need to be behind the lines, being, you know, with you at the forefront, talking to our politicians and our leaders, asking for more resources? How do they determine the funding?
It's a little bit of everything. So you fill out an application, you do the whole process, and you report back you put in your data and everything that you want the HUD office to know, anything that you think is going to leverage more funds for your program. It's always really great to get in front of council members and, you know, our community leaders to keep that awareness going. I'm definitely about that. And then also, we as a community can score projects as well. So if they, you know, follow what HUD is requiring, then they get more points. And then HUD itself awards points too. So it's a very complex process. It's not just filling out an application and, like, you get money. Mm-hmm. There's a lot that goes behind it. And our agencies that are HUD-funded are doing amazing with, like, submitting reports. That is something that I know always bogs people down, is because you have to send those reports to HUD on a quarterly basis. So keeping up with HUD dollars is its own job, really.
It's its own job. Mm-hmm.
For an agency. It's not a walk in the park. So that's why we appreciate it so much when agencies want to become HUD funded, because it is a lot of work.
Ms. Howard, she is like the guru over here. She said HUD.gov gives the entire country what was asked and the amount it was rewarded. So we can get that information online, just like you mentioned. And she dropped it in the comments for you guys. HUD.gov.
And our continuum of care is NC506.
NC506.
Or 506, yeah.
That's for our region.
That is our region. Yeah, so every continuum of care has a number. So NC501 or NC503. Ours is 506. So
NC506. Mm-hmm. And this information that we shared is valuable, because if you want to get more involved, you can access this information so you can get these numbers and help be a voice.
Yes,
absolutely. Ms. Howard really want to know, how much did HUD give your state? I guess go to HUD.gov. That information is transparent, like Megan mentioned. And she also says the key is ask and keep asking the complex questions. Don't stop.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Agree with that. Just be in the face of what you're passionate about. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we're really passionate about homelessness, and we want people to be aware. I told you earlier that I get really, like, nervous about being on the news or on this, but it's so important for people to understand what a COC does, what the community is doing, and how we're trying to end this problem.
Yeah.
Just raising
awareness. I can understand, you know, I'm a passionate advocate for HIV awareness, and when I first started out, I used to be a little nervous. Now you can't get me to shut up. You really can't. And with that said, I'm going to use that for my plug. Hashtag ThinkRedILM. We will have our second annual 5K and run on March 23rd at 10 a.m. at Greenfield Park. There's a $15 early bird registration fee. If you search Eventbrite at hashtag ThinkRedILM, you can get that information. We are accepting vendors. There's a $25 cost for vendors who want to come out and share their products with the community. We will be doing HIV testing. There will be grand prizes for the poetry contest. You can get that information off of our Facebook page at Seeds of Healing. We will be having sharing resource information, doing bingo games. Again, I said vendors. There will be foods and drinks, you know, legal drinks out there. So we will have nourishment for you. And if you do get tested, there's an opportunity to get a gift card. But we want you to come out and have fun. There will be yoga. Bobby Z, who is a DJ right here in Wilmington, he provided great entertainment last year. He will be joining us again. So if you are in the town, or if you want to be in the town, join us on March 23rd. Thank you, Ms. Howard. You've been a great, great, great viewer, along with all of our other viewers today on social media. And for those of you who are listening online, we appreciate you for listening to Making Impact, your number one station at 104.9 FM and 1490 AM. I'm going to give Ms. Megan the last opportunity. You can have the last word if you want to tell our listeners and viewers anything you want to leave.
I think that homelessness is not as black and white. It really all is related, because if you think about people who are struggling with mental health or substance abuse, that could put you into homelessness, and then it could keep you there. Or you could get injured and, you know, start taking opiates and then become maybe addicted that way and find yourself into homelessness. I think it's really important for people to be aware that, like I said, it's not as just black and white as, oh, this person might be lazy, or this person is just a drug addict.
No judgment.
And we don't know everyone's situation. Like I said, everyone is really one crisis away from experiencing homelessness, depending on your circumstances. So I just always want people to, you know, have an open mind when we talk about these things, and that it's not as easy as, you know, putting people into housing. We need wraparound services, support services, because we need people to reach that sustainability and that self-actualization. So keep an open mind, to get involved, keep up with education, become more aware. Just, you know, if you're passionate about it, you know, email me.
Email her. We're going to drop that information. Do you want to tell people your email address? Because we have people listening over the airwaves.
Yes, it's Megan, M-A-E-G-A-N, Z like in zebra, at kfearcog.org. And then also, if you want to get involved, we hold monthly TriHIC meetings the first Tuesday of every month. And that's where we come together as a community, talk about different resources. We actually have a really great schedule coming up for this year with presenters that we want. So we have someone coming from the hospital to talk about hospitalization and homelessness. We have someone coming to talk about resiliency and ACEs. Someone's going to be coming talking about Florence. So we have got a really good schedule for...
What day is that?
It's the first Tuesday of every month, and it's on our website. If you go under kfearcog.org, the Tri-County Agency tab, and then you can see committees and subcommittees. It's all right there.
kfearcog.
Yeah, C-O-G.
kfearcog.org.
Yes.
And they can gather this information. Do you have a number that you could share? Office number?
So I'm never really at my office. Okay. And the best way to reach me is through email, so I actually don't even know my office number.
So just spell your email again for our listeners one last time.
It's Megan, M-A-E-G-A-N, Z like in zebra, at kfearcog.org. It's also online, too. If you go to our website, my email is plastered all over it. So if you're interested in getting involved, just email me. I'll put you in the right direction.
One thing I want to mention that was gathered some information for us today is that people need to understand that shelters are a response and not a solution. I thought that was a great quote that they got. And to understand that permanent supportive housing is what's important, which you mentioned, we can just provide the four walls as a start, because rent can cost 30% of a person's income. So that, you know, I don't think people really understand when you got to pay rent, then you got to pay co-pays, then you have to pay for utilities, and you have to pay for child care, gas, car note. That 30% is huge.
Oh yeah, anything more than 30% is actually cost burden. So once you start getting above 30%, it becomes not affordable. And so there was, for that legislative breakfast that I talked about with the Affordable Housing Coalition, they actually had a really great packet on affordable housing, and they go over tons of statistics among the three counties. It was very eye-opening, even as someone who's already been in this system and working with in these individuals. So I can't imagine if, you know, you were there and you just had no idea. I bet it was very shocking.
Yeah. All right. So thank you, Tyrone. He said, we are true servants. Y'all are true servants. I know that's right. Thank you, Ty. Thank you, Ms. Howard, for dropping all the knowledge. Each one teach one. You are so right. Well, there you have it. That was another episode of Soul Time. Next week, we'll be having a discussion on heart health Our special guest is Miss Elizabeth. She will be calling in for a phone interview all the way from New Jersey, and she will share her personal experience. This is Heart Healthy Month for February, and hopefully you'll be available to tune in. So we'll see you next week for that. And here we go. We out. Enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you, Megan.
And most of all, thank you for your input. You can make contact with us via the web, www.gospeljoy1490.net. It has been great having you with us. It is Seas of Healing with Dr. Phenomenally and Alicia J. And do something great with the rest of your time. This has been Seas of Healing.
Ooh, I'm sweating my back.
All right. So what'd you think? You survived?
Yeah.